The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk. Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
You're listening to Winners and Sinners on The Hard Shoulder, where we look back on the week that was, but with a few twists there. As always, we're joined by Off The Ball's Ger Gilroy and Today FM's Alison Curtis. Alison, let's start with your winner of the week.
Teenage girls.
Ooh.
So
interesting choice.
We do often kind of, or they get a bad rap a lot of the time for being moody. And there's all these, like, you know, jokes going around the internet going, you know, when you live with it, it's like living with someone who scares the crap out of you if you live with a teenage girl and the whole family run around the corner and away from them. But my daughter Joan had her 15th birthday on Monday. And it's a thing on Snapchat where they all post what this person means to them. And honest to God, nothing short of tears flooding from both my husband and I when she read them all out. And what struck me is we didn't talk like that to each other. I don't think we said, I love you when we were younger to our friends, did
God,
we?
No.
Yo.
No.
God, no.
In my school, you would have been killed if you It was a jungle. You know, you didn't show any form of weakness at all.
But also, like, really poetic what they were writing about one another. And it was just like, I was just going, this is amazing. And, you know, it's obviously on a social media platform, but they're saying it to each other in private messages as well. So they genuinely feel that way. I just thought it was amazing how they were writing it.
How did Joan, was she in tears too?
No, but like, so I looked over at my husband and I was like, did he yawn or is he crying? Should I start crying now? What's happening here? But it was actually beautiful to hear and just nice to know that that sense of camaraderie that, you know, because I've seen it in action, you have too, with, you know, your daughter and her friends, that they do build each other up, but to actually have it written out like Shakespearean, like it was lovely to see. So let's not be so hard on our teenage girls.
And is it, because I have seen as well, I'm sorry, by the way, I coached girls all the way up from under eight to minors, and I am in awe of them. I think, you know, girls should rule the world. Absolutely. they're such the
in
girls
awe,
I coach.
The
menor, yeah,
like,
they're such impressive young women. They were absolutely brilliant. So I couldn't agree with you more. That writing out of the messages, I suppose, how do I phrase it? I don't want to be cynical anyway. Is it a little bit performative?
Well, that's what I mentioned. It's obviously on a story, but the private ones that were sent to her as well were equally as lovely. Because, yeah, and then she was saying that some friends keep track of people don't do it on the birthday, and they're like, I'm not going to do it. I was like, how would you even, and Joan's like, well, I couldn't even imagine keeping track of that. So it's just, I just thought it was really lovely. And like, they're all well thought out as well. So it's not like, I love you because you're funny. I love you because of this and like more details. And I just thought it was really nice.
I think it's lads as well, because I've seen it with my two sons and their friends. They are kinder to each other. And,
yeah.
they're gentler to each other. And they're much more tolerant of their friends' foibles and weaknesses and, you know, little eccentricities. Whereas when I look back, I kind of cringe when I look back, because any weakness was seized upon.
Like you would never hug each other or...
Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Are we amazing parents then? Is that what we should really be deducting from this?
Can I just
balance this
a tiny bit with some like, anecdotes versus evidence kind of thing? Like, and I love what you're saying. And I really... And I want it to be true. But there are lots of studies that show that teenage girls are the most unhappy, loneliest cohort of people on the planet.
Mm.
By all kind of objective measures, they are unhappy. That comparison is the thief of their joy. They're judged harshly, and that there's also a lot of studies that say that bullying is rife among particularly teenage girls,
and it's subtle in that form,
and
yeah.
That it's cyberbullying, but it's also regular bullying. It's bullying reinvented itself and went online, but it never came offline either. So. I would love this to be true, but part of me goes, I still think it's a bloody tough road.
Oh, no,
I think 14-year-old girls have the hardest road practically socially of any group that exists. I wish it wasn't true.
No, and not rose-colored or tinted glasses. Like, it's been the last 18 months has been a real learning curve and real up and down and a struggle. And as you say, it's comparative, you know, comparison of other people, it's exclusion.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not being naive about
the
that.
The bullying, as you say, it's often not
present to other people.
It's the passive aggressive excluding rather than the aggressive aggressive thump you in the head or whatever. It's mean.
Yeah. No, it is.
And it's kind of insidious and sometimes hard to pin down. But I love the idea of everyone building each other up. And I do agree with you that our kids speak in a more kind way to each other. And I definitely think that that idea that it's okay to not be okay and all that has filtered down a lot. But I still think,
no, there's two sides to this, definitely. There is.
Teenage years.
But I think
be,
I was just
cruel.
Oh, they are, definitely.
Sure. I'm interested in the evidence stuff. I wonder, has that changed significantly, or were teenage girls as lonely 24? You know, we're getting this information and it's coming through. And I wonder, does that pass with time when they find a tribe in college or post-college or...
Yeah.
God, you'd hope so, Jared. I mean, because I really want all these lovely ideas to be true for them. Because I have four kids, I have a girl and three sons, and I really, you would do anything to ease their path through that rocky time. But equally, I don't know. I do have worries.
Yeah, and I do think second year in particular, I've been told from
second
so
year
many
has been a dear 14
really hard
14 yeah. for girls second year. That's when it all goes.
Yeah.
Tits up really for them. It actually does.
Yeah,
it's
difficult. It's been a struggle definitely for everyone. But overall, I think I was just, my point was just we give them such a bad rap and they were like, we're moody and they're mean and they're this and they're that. But I was like, no, they're all these other gorgeous things as well.
I think that's absolutely fair. Jer, your winner of the week?
German football fans, totally different vibe. I was at the Bayern Munich Paris Saint-Germain second leg the other night at the Allianz Arena in Munich, and we were a little bit late getting there. We were there in time for kickoff, but like we were there with like 15
minutes. Was that because all the fine dining you were doing beforehand?
No comment.
I love these kind of football fans that Ger and Shane are, that you quaff shat enough to pop or something.
I know
way
the restaurant
Ger
was in before the match, and you'd have to drag me out of it as well.
You're maximizing your life or
yes,
whatever it is.
Exactly.
We were a bit concerned that there might be some traffic. There was no traffic because everybody else had been there for 2 hours in advance singing their hearts out. Because
they're organized.
Well, it's the part of the culture is to go early and sing, as opposed to, you know, the Irish culture is the match will be delayed because we're late. They'll
have a
delay,
couple
throw
of
in time
and then
for
arrive.
The dubs. Like, yeah. And then when you get there, there's this mad tifo behind the goal, which is like from floor to ceiling with just everybody actually putting up their very well organized, multicolored. The first time I ever saw it was like the 1988 Olympics when the opening ceremony was on and everybody had to hold up a card and all the flags of the world were on. I was like, well, that's amazing. Bayern are just doing this now for like, obviously it was a massive game for them, but they do it all the time. And then they sang the whole match, even though they conceded a goal after 2.5 minutes. The fans behind the goal didn't stop bouncing the whole way through. And at the end, after they got beaten, those fans stayed for about 10 or 15 minutes. The players just stood there, heartbroken, not moving in front of them. And then everybody left and got on buses really peacefully. We got the train back into town. It was quiet, but there was no aggro. Mm. There was no one falling around the place, you know, even though German players
are strong.
Is that
down to those specific, like Bayern, is that down to the specific club?
It's a German football thing.
Is it a change in just culture in football?
Can I slightly push back a little bit? And just give a counter view. I agree with you, the atmosphere, because I've been at German games. The atmosphere is unbelievable. But I suppose I'd have the same question I'd have to Alison. Is it a little bit performative? Like
the singing. I remember we had this conversation.
I was at a game and it was in Dortmund. And I can't remember who they were playing. Was it one of the Berlin sides they were playing? And the Berlin team got hammered and they sang the whole way through. But to me, it almost felt like the game was incidental.
It's a cultural identifier as opposed to it being an emotional investment in the football in that instance. Like, I suspect they might have been, did they think they were going to get beaten? Whereas last night there was this mad hope that Bayern...
Yeah, fair enough.
And they were trying to feed the players who weren't quite performing. So I think contextually...
I think the idea of fans when their team is 1-0 down singing, getting behind their team, encouraging them, I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
If you're 4-1 down, you're still singing...
Well,
I mean, the Irish fans famously
did
it in Poland.
Gdansk,
and Roy Keane had a go at them and said,
but I think he was wrong because I was there.
I do think
and
he was wrong.
We were singing a lament for the death of the team. They were dying. But
it was defiance, wasn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
And,
there's something powerful in that. Yeah. I think an act of defiance by fans is a very emotional thing.
I agree. And I sometimes wonder the about players, the German fans, is it more of a
performance? Here's a question for you, and obviously you both know, all three of you know, I don't know anything about sport, but is it bad even if it is performative? Is that not just part of the added enjoyment that not only do they get from going there and singing and they're a tribe as much as followers of the team, but also it's really entertaining for the for people who go along to the matches from other clubs.
There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong. I find it sometimes, I wonder, is a little artificial. That's what I...
But it feels so flat when you've ever been to something, even if it's like a small match or you know, a local one and there's no sound at all. Mm. It's that eerie, actually.
Yeah, I think I'd be in your camp, Kira, that like it's part of the process of going. It's kind of like church. You say the
Fair.
Prayers even though you're not necessarily tuned into what the sermon is that week, and it feels a little bit to me like it's a we belong to this thing,
and this is their ritual,
and it's our team, and these players maybe not be the very best that we've ever had, but sometime this is all going to come back around again, and we were here through thick and thin. That's how I would frame it.
Yeah, and I definitely respect that,
and I'd say the Bulls fans have a bit of that, that they do show up even when the team, it's been thin enough for the last decade.
A long time, Ger.
And they're still showing up in good numbers and singing.
I think I kind of like it. Like it, whether it's defiance, whether it's hope over expectation, whether it's just that tribe. I actually think group singing is a powerful thing in and of itself. It often makes me teary-eyed, and I don't exactly know why I get teary-eyed.
There is a new Bulls chant where they sing, you play for us and we'll sing for you until we win the league once more.
Well, that's very good.
And
you know,
it could be a while.
Yeah, but it's good.
You're going to be singing.
If you play for us, we'll back you. Yeah, I think that's it. I think if you're getting beaten and they're trying hard, that's really all the fans want. But it is that sense of communal belonging. Which
definitely. I'd be like you. I get emotional, and it's rare that I do.
I will.
But
when
a group of people sing.
When people are singing in a group, and I've no idea what it's tapping into that makes me do that.
At Christmas time, we did an outside broadcast for the show, and it was a seniors choir, and I literally was in bits going, oh my God. Now, I could have been really tired, and it was crazy. The show was mental, but a senior choir.
I don't know what it... the guys are looking at us.
No, 100%. Absolutely. They're like, the Welsh fans are incredible.
Yeah.
I hate Wales and Welsh rugby and whatever, because they always beat us. But... their singing is ridiculous.
The other night after Arsenal qualified for the Champions League final, the whole family in our house were watching, and the players went down and they sang North London, the fans sang, and the whole family was in tears watching it.
Oh God, we're all extremely emotional. Let's just take a break for the news with Eamon Torsney.
Okay, you're listening to Winners and Sinners. Ger Gilroy and Alison Curtis are with us. Ger, you're sinner of the week.
Just put my glasses on to read this properly, so... I've talked about this, I think, a bit before when I got glasses, and I hated the whole fact that it was like a signature, a sign that you're getting old. And then I had to get new glasses, and I was like, that's not right. Because we had this bit where it's like, hang off getting glasses as long as you possibly can, because as soon as you put them on, your eyes deteriorate. And apparently some people disputed this. I think that was you, Shane.
Well, the optician or ophthalmologist disputed.
They denied that.
Yeah, saying your eyesight doesn't get worse because you wear glasses.
Your eyes have changed noticeably in about 10 months, enough that your previous glasses would now be underperforming, particularly for reading and screens, which is all you do.
Yeah.
worth getting updated lenses sooner rather than later. That was, I got my first prescription, and then I put the second prescription, put them side by side in AI, and the AI was like, oh, look at you. You're getting old, aren't you?
Are these the new ones you have on
these
now?
These are
I think they're pretty nice, may I just say, which is probably a side issue, but I think they suit you and are nice.
Well, thank you for that.
Do you need them only up close?
I just need them for reading, yeah. I've still got pretty good...
Isn't it funny how we all are? Because, like, I see you with glasses on. I don't think, oh, there's Ger Gilroy getting old. I just think, oh, Ger has a nice pair of glasses. Whereas in Ger's head, in your head, you're going... Look at me! I'm withering on the bough. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it's funny. The
chair's only a young fella.
Literally,
but you know what I mean. Our inner heads and what other people's perceptions are so different.
And if you could tell your teenage self that,
I know
everything,
or your teenage daughters that, too.
No one cares about anybody else. Is essentially the truth of that.
That's one of the life's big messages.
But that might have come out wrong.
Despite the earlier message we were giving, we really care about.
But there is those things, and there's something else that I've often thought about. Like I, by the way, don't wear glasses, but that's because about, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago, got my eyes lasered. So I have really good vision, But like, because they burnt the eyeballs off me.
And will that work forever?
It's not guaranteed to, but so far so good. I can see.
Really Kira, well. I was offered that and I was too afraid.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
It was years ago. It was 2007. It was right before I got married and I was just too chicken. And the two other people that worked on the show with me at the time went ahead with it and they've been fine.
Yeah.
So that's a long time ago.
It was groundbreaking for me, like life-changing, because I was very short-sighted. So, and I didn't actually mind wearing glasses. It wasn't so much that, but the difference was I used to sleep with my glasses under my pillow because if I woke up and they were out of reach, I wouldn't find them because I couldn't see. So I had to have them to hand.
So were you very short-sighted?
Yeah, really short-sighted. And I had glasses from, I think it was, fifth or sixth class in school.
All right, okay.
So I
can understand why you went for it for sure. I'm not that bad. But my sister is the same as you. Like, she literally can't see.
I was blind. In fact, it was just a blurry world out there. But what I find interesting is that we're most of, I know you'd say you didn't really like wearing glasses, but people kind of accept glasses as a normal thing. But for some reason, they can accept that their eyesight is going. But when your hearing goes, people think hearing aids are absolutely no way, no how. I'm not being that old person.
That person.
And we seem to have a weird thing that our hearing going, like everything goes. You know
I have noticed my hearing has deteriorated.
But would you find it more of a struggle to go and get a hearing aid than to wear a pair of glasses?
I hope I'd be a little more enlightened than that.
I hope so. Like for all of us, because it's no good not being able to hear. In the same way, it's no good not being able to
and
see.
And you know what? I went for lunch with friends last weekend and actually we had just come back from the States. So my ear was kind of blocked. But I spent much of the lunch kind of going, sorry, what did you say? And turning my good ear. It's a struggle, it's hard.
Shane and I had a real, and I'm speaking on my own part, old bat moment.
I instantly know what you're talking about.
We spent too much time together if we can finish each other's sentences. But we went to this restaurant and it was a Brazilian restaurant and neither ourselves nor our producer, Claire, really understood what was going on in terms of there was a traffic light system when you wanted meat and didn't want meat. There was a salad bar. But it was all very confusing. And there was also sets of tongs on the table that we didn't understand, what we really didn't know. And we were like people who'd never been let out before. But there was a man in front of us with a very strong Brazilian accent, so it was hard to understand that way. But he was really softly spoken. But I did the thing that old people do because I couldn't have a clue what he was saying and I couldn't hear him. That because I was presuming that I couldn't hear him, therefore that he couldn't hear me. So I was saying to Claire and Shane, I can't hear a word he's saying really loudly.
And I was saying, Claire, but he can hear you.
And I reminded myself so much of, I hope she's not listening, but anyway, she's a bit deaf herself. My aunt, I have an aunt who does that. And I was going, oh my God, I'm turning into somebody else.
Yeah.
I actually thought you were going to reference the fact that we were both in the lift yesterday on the third floor.
Jesus.
And we kept pressing 3. Instinctively, because we thought we were on the ground floor and the door kept open. We were saying, what is wrong
they
with
all
this
the
lift?
Same.
We were actually both saying, thing.
We were both saying, this stupid lift, this lift.
And we were both pressing 3 and then we both realised, actually, we're on 3.
And we're like, our swipes aren't working. What's going on?
Yeah, fair.
Anyway, I'm kind of with you on
this. It was more the
one,
speed too. With the deterioration. Yeah. It's like, so definitely, I would say, put off getting glasses as long as you possibly can.
Ooh. Mm. Terms and conditions apply. This might not be advice from
ophthalmologist. Not a
doctor.
This is more a personal.
Yeah, fight.
Do you get
vibe.
The torch out on your mobile phone when you're ordering?
Well, like now I have to. Well, now I need them for eating. I can't see the which part of this. It's like that.
Oh wow!
Where I was like, oh my God,
that is a little depressing.
Yeah. I saw a meme the other day saying that the flashlight app on my phone, I never thought I would be using it quite as much as I was. Is this part of being an adult? But I think
it is.
Let's just say that it's part of being an adult as opposed to anything else. Do you have a sinner for us, Asa?
I do. I know all of our, well, not all of our children, Jairs, are still
in this
frame. But there's a massive thing that's happened in the last little while is all the, you know, the fidget toys and sensory toys and things like that. There's ones that look like dumplings, and I'll admit, they're really cute. But a father, TikToker, Canadian dad, basically couldn't get over the smell of one of these and then put them in a plastic bag with a measure of CO2, basically, VOCs, like the emissions from it. And within 20 seconds, it started going up and up and up and up and up. And this is his, like, 6-year-old child playing with these. And he put 2 in the one bag, and within a minute, they had reached a toxic level that was higher than paint, like, which isn't great, like the fumes from paints. So he's like, this is crazy. These are sold to our kids. And actually, my daughter did pick one up the other day. And then another story off the side of it is there's a TikTok trend where they're putting them in microwaves, and they don't feel hot coming out, but the inside that they're made of is. And like little kids are getting burnt. So just if you have kids at home, they look like a dumpling. They are adorable, but maybe pitch them safely somehow.
Yeah, and don't put toys in the microwave.
Yeah, well, we know that. Definitely don't do that. Yeah.
There
it's crazy.
You know, that's the problem because there are things you can heat. You know, you get those sleep things.
Yes,
full
like
of
the
lavender
beans.
And things.
Yeah.
And you heat them up and then you go to bed with them. They help you sleep and you snuggle up to them and they smell nice.
Are those kind of what used to be hot water bottles, but now they're, you can, those ones you can put in the microwave.
They are microwavable.
Yeah. Not your regular
that's
hot
really
water bottle.
I wonder though.
But something that innocent, you're like, oh, there's, yeah.
My science brain says that the emissions were what was coming off contained in a bag, in a closed environment. So
he put
that
it beside it as well. The VOC meter, you put it beside it.
So it wasn't in a closed bag?
No.
Oh,
so
okay.
The first experiment was and the second one wasn't. So that's insane.
Okay, that's way more concerning than the first one.
Yeah.
Okay.
They do stink. They are gross.
Oh, they are so gross.
Oh my God. Yeah. So,
what do they, I'm not in this zone.
What do they stink of? What are they?
Nothing.
They do nothing. They just,
they're fidget things. So it's like, you know.
Stress balls.
So they feel nice, do they?
They feel oily.
Yeah.
But they do, I know the things you're talking about now. They do feel oily and they do feel a bit. Chemically or something.
Yes.
And then clearly they are.
They slowly reform back to the shape that they were in. And
but they originally started for people that were neurodivergent and needos and things like that to have, you know, sensory fidgets in school.
And the smell from them, sorry to be stupid, is not very nice.
No, it smells like chemical smells. Definitely.
Oh, so they're not like back in the day, like, you know, you had those rubbers that smelt of strawberries
scented.
Or something on the top of your pencil.
No, they're not supposed to have it.
Oh, okay.
I know this is radio, but I'll show both of you because you don't know. They're like, they look like little dumplings that you would eat.
Well,
so,
and they obviously come in all different shapes and sizes.
Okay.
So we've got like
I now totally get what they are.
It was much better in our day, Kira, when we had things like
fake cigarettes
that you could buy.
The Popeyes.
I mean, that when you think back in it, they were kind of chewable
and
sweets.
But you'd
walk around.
They were like
around,
a long white stick with a little end on it.
You are definitely younger than us then.
But there were the fake ones with the you get in the joke shop that would have stuff come out of them and you could refill them with carcinogenic talcum powder and blow the talc out and breathe it in.
Yeah. Health and safety ruined a lot of stuff for us all, didn't it?
They were the days. Okay, we better take a break. Back with more from Ger and Alison in a couple of months.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
And you're very welcome back to Winners and Sinners. Ger and Alison are still with us. Alison, what else did you want to talk about?
David Attenborough.
Oh.
Happy 100th birthday. Lego changed their logo to say, because it was originally from 0 to 99. They changed it to 0 to 100 for David Attenborough today.
Great marketing.
And there's a big mural in Arklow that was painted. I don't know if you saw images of that going around. So, 100 years. So the only person to win a BAFTA in black and white, color, HD, and 3D formats.
No way. Is it
amazing?
Incredible. Started in the early 50s on BBC with a zoo program. And he's got over 50 animal species named after him. He's just
they named a new,
legend.
I thought it was a bit, I wasn't quite sure. I was happy about it. But a new species of wasp. Yesterday.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I was like, a wasp? Could they not have like done a panda or, you know, something?
Anything, frogs,
something
butterflies.
Cuter,
plants.
Nicer. We don't like wasps that much.
No.
But anyway.
And one fact about him is he really hates rats. So it's the only animal on the planet, I suppose, he didn't
he
want to make a film
like
about.
Rats.
Yeah.
Well, who does?
Good timing for that, you know?
Yeah. We all hate rats at the moment, don't we?
What's the secret of his enduring? Was it his passion? Or is it, I should say, his passion? Is that the secret
you would
to his
wonder,
enduring success?
Because it's not like it's, I mean, it would be a high pressurized job. I mean, it's in the public eye, the same as it is for a lot of people. But I think it is, it's just a remarkable, like it's remarkable that he was still working in his 90s.
I think it's how long his longevity, the fact, those are mutually sort of feeding into this. Like he's very good, so he has longevity, but his longevity is one of the things that we love about him. I think that there's his age is actually what we love. But he was also like an early adopter. Do you know what I mean? Back when it's all very cool to be into biodiversity now and all of that.
Exactly.
He was way ahead of that curve.
Yeah.
That curve didn't exist when he got into it.
He comes from a pretty extraordinary family,
doesn't he?
I mean, his father was an academic. His mother was a social activist. Obviously, his brother, Dickie Attenborough.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
That's what he's famous for.
Yeah. That's the film I would have picked out, all right.
But he was our house, his brother is famous for looking like my dad.
Oh.
Really? Yeah.
My dad looked a bit like Santa Claus or
going 54th,
50. Or Dickie. Yeah, completely. Yeah. That was what my dad looked like.
In the Miracle.
Yeah, he said. Yeah, also, yeah.
Yeah, you did.
So, like, will we have, I mean, he's very much of his time, I would think. In the same way, I would say Brendan Behan was of his time and Jim Sheridan is of his time. Will we get characters like that in the future when we all have our heads in the phone?
Who do we think who's around now will still be around at 100 doing what they're doing? Can we think of anyone?
Well, that's a great question.
For starters, the odds are against it in terms of mortality and so on. So, I mean, you got to survive that long.
But supposing they survive, who do we think is good enough at what they do that they could still be around?
I could see Pat Kenny doing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I could see him still broadcasting at 100. What about, you were talking about her during the week, Celia Holman Lee.
Oh, Celia Holman Lee.
I should stress, she's a long way to go before she
does.
Hits
100. I think she's 74, but she is an unbelievable icon. And she taught me how to stand the other day, and I've been doing it wrong for a very long time.
You're all talking about people of a certain generation when you're coming up with names here. Are you not thinking of like the Timothy Chalamet, that generation?
Yeah, anybody. By the way, I'm not limiting it to older folk.
The Hailey Rays, any of them could last to their 100s?
Yeah, it's hard to predict. But there's certain professions, like, I mean, it's amazing that Rolling Stones released new music this week. That's insane. But there are certain professions that dictate that, you know, you run out of steam.
Yeah.
Maybe David's didn't necessarily dictate that.
That is true. Yeah. If you're a professional footballer, you're not going to keep playing.
No.
Although, what did Stanley Matthews do until 54 or something? Yeah. He played until? I mean, you wouldn't do it today. Ger, anything else for the mix?
Rival Season 2, it's not out until this day next week, which means you've got a week to watch season one to catch up on the
first. Have you watched
season one? Yeah, I did not expect to enjoy it half as much as I did. It was the exact type of popcorn television you need for the moment.
I fully agree. I was actually at the premiere of Rivals 2 on Tuesday. I think it was Tuesday. And I'm not allowed to even say what happens in it. But it is such a fun romp through the 80s.
I thought Rivals was the ice hockey one.
No. Rivals is Gilly Cooper.
Oh, right.
He did Rumpy Pumpy in the stables.
Oh, that's rivalry, is it?
Posh Brits in the Nip.
Not the same.
Okay.
Like in stately homes.
Probably just as well we clarified that.
Yeah.
So this is the Gilly Cooper. I suspect I'm not the only one. Yeah. But
you're the only one in this room.
Yeah.
But that's still 25%.
Aidan Turner, the Irish actor, is
one of
the
stars.
Yeah, I hadn't.
So good wasn't the term you used when you were chatting to me about it the other day.
I said he was a fine actor, Shane.
You did, with the emphasis on fine.
He's great. Victoria Smurfit is great. Danny Dyer is great.
Yeah.
There are so many really good, well-cast performances in this, but it is exactly as you said. It is the fun. I'll put it like this. I went to see the... did I mention I went to see the premiere? But I did, and I came home and I went on Amazon and I rebought the books, which I read in my teens, because I thought, you know what, I'm going on holidays in a while.
I didn't read the books; I just flicked through the books.
Did you know?
Yeah,
I didn't read them either.
Looking for certain parts.
Was there certain ones? But I thought, you know what, I'm going to bring a couple of Gilly Coopers on holidays with me because holiday reads, I don't necessarily want. You know, a memoir of World War II or something. I want something that...
What's wrong with a memoir of World War II?
I knew
on your
you'd
holidays.
Say that, Jacob. But I want the popcorn. No, I want the fluff. And I want to lie by a pool with a cocktail in my hand and go, this is great fun.
Of course you do, because you do a talk
show. Or you miss
something,
it doesn't really matter.
No.
I should say, Danny Dyer came in to News Talk quite recently and charmed...
He did off the ball, yeah.
Yeah, it was guys, wasn't it? And he charmed absolutely everybody. He was walking up to people sitting at the computer going, what do you do? And just really friendly... everybody, he wowed everyone, didn't he?
He did. The last person I saw who did that was Don Conroy. He was in last week. It was like, oh, that's Don Conroy. Can I get a picture? I can't work myself up to do it. So
there
you go. Opposite ends.
Danny Dyer is a really likable character in Rivals as well. There's something very likable about him. Actually, they're mostly pretty likable.
Jason McTiernan, did you? I should have walked up to him and said, thank you for giving me one of the best days of my life. But
2001.
Yeah. Because he scored that goal against
him. That's like a line from a song, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it is. Okay, listen, that is our lot for today. A big thank you to Ger and to Alison, Ger Gilroy and Alison Curtis. Kira, that's our lot for today.
It absolutely is. Other than that, just to say that we'll be back on the airways 4 p.m. on Monday. Have a fantastic weekend.
To our August Toga Bogey.
The Hard Shoulder with Kira Kelly and Shane Coleman. This is News Talk.